Log Talk Radio. Log Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome.
Hello, my name is Joseph G., and I'm a refugee from several 12-step programs and co-creator of RumRadio.org. RumRadio.org was created to inform, inspire, and empower sponsorship locally and internationally to be the very best, both personally and spiritually. A sponsor is someone who takes you through the 12 steps. A sponsor is a guide, a mentor, a friend, and a teacher. A sponsor is the older brother and sister we never had. There are many 12-step programs. Overeaters Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, Debtors Anonymous, and on and on Anonymous. There's even a Paranoids Anonymous. The only problem, no one will tell you where they hold the meetings. As people in recovery, we have learned that addiction is a spiritual malady requiring a spiritual solution. We are not weak people trying to get strong, nor are we bad people trying to get good. We are sick people trying to get well. Rum Radio is for anyone that thinks they might have a problem with excessive compulsive behavior that manifests itself in addiction. RumRadio.org addresses the A and A model, but can be easily conformed to any adverse spiritual malady that manifests itself into addictive behavior. The particular spiritual malady is but a symptom of the disease. At RumRadio.org, we get down to causes and conditions. We in recovery have discovered that the one assurance of getting happy, joyous, and free was to work with someone who suffers from the same malady. But you can't give away something you don't have. Rum Radio is that resource, and like usual, if you find a benefit, pass it on. Take what you need and leave the rest. I have dedicated my time, talents, and treasure to this end. The credit for this work is God's and the fellowship. This is Joseph G. See you on the radio. Rum Radio.
Hi everyone, this is Joseph G. Calling you about the good news of 12-step recovery. Is that you, Oliver?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good. Good. I'm glad you could make it. Oliver's an old friend. I met Oliver how many years ago? Oliver, must have been 12, 13 years ago, or no?
Yeah,
no,
not that. It's been more than 10 years. I know that.
Yeah, more than 10 years. Well, with the original home group, the Hope Group, out in Cedar Park, Texas.
That's right.
And I saw Oliver. I was there the first day Oliver came in. And it's always such a joy in the recovery program to see someone come in and grow. Sometimes it's a bumpy road. Sometimes you take off like a rocket ship. But everybody's got their own experience. But it's a great thing to see people growing up in the rooms and maturing into productive members of society, helping their fellows along the way. So welcome, Oliver, and please feel free, any comments or questions like that. I'd like to thank WNAH out of Nashville, Hoy Carter, gives us a stream in his WNAH live in Nashville. Great city, Nashville. And he helps as a public service program in the spirit of a positive position from WNAH to get out to the community. It's very nice of them to do that. We're going to talk tonight. Tonight's religion versus spirituality in the rooms of recovery. My experience is that most, if not all, addictions are spiritual in nature, and it takes a spiritual solution for a spiritual malady. We have religion and we have spirituality. I like to think that religion is for people who don't want to go to hell, and religion is for people who don't want to go to hell. spirituality is for people who've already been there. They've experienced the hard knocks of life, and with that pain, have been able to come to an agreement to grow spiritually. You find that true, Oliver?
Absolutely. You know, I had a big problem with some of the terminology that I encountered when I first came into the rooms, because I thought, you know, immediately thought of religion. I think, namely, the word God and the 12 steps themselves really threw me off. But you know, today, you know, I realize and I understand that the difference between the two, you know, the religion, being religious and being spiritual. You know, my for example, my mother is agnostic. She's always been agnostic, but that doesn't mean that I didn't grow up in a spiritual household. You know, she taught me the truth, the difference between you know, what was wrong and what was right. She always encouraged me to share and, you know, give a true friend the shirt off my back if they needed it, and just, you know, just an all around spirit of love and forgiveness. And that's what I equate to what spirituality is, you know. And religion for me is more the practices, you know. There's really no dogma or anything like that, or doctrines in Alcoholics Anonymous or a 12-step program. But it is spiritual, because, you know, I really like some of the words that the big book uses, stuff like, you know, avocation and being an advocate. You know, we do these things, you know, we share our experiences with people, we give them our time and our attention, because we want to. We don't want, you know, people who are struggling with alcoholism and addiction to die from this disease or to not get well. You know, we want to share with the gifts that we have found with them, and that's what I equate with spiritual. But go ahead, Joseph. You're doing a great job of talking about the topic. I'd like to hear some more.
Sure. Oliver has a Facebook. It's Half Measures Room. It's a really good, some really good insights. If you ever get a chance, it's Half Measures on Facebook. Look them up. I wanted to address the fact, when we say religion, it comes to mind the particular flavor of dogma. And sometimes religion gets a bad rap in the sense that we do things religiously. You know, we religiously go to church, but we religiously go to the supermarket. We have certain rituals that we do on a regular and almost a religious basis, and it means that we give all credit to God as we do these things. So in that sense, it's okay. The problem in the rooms is that people come in, have not really determined their relationship, and that's why we use higher power. They really don't have, you know, even though they've been going to church, they've gone to Christian churches. Some of the best Christians I've ever met were atheists. That's an odd statement.
Yeah,
but I had a friend of mine. He was an engineer. He was an atheist, and he lived his life as an exemplary Christian. He did unto others as he would have them done unto him. He was honest in all his business dealings. He was very helpful to everyone he met. You know, and these are all the attributes of Christ, but had no belief. That reminds me of the story. There was this atheist who lived a good life. He did the next right thing and was honest and was hardworking, good to his neighbors, and it worked for him. And his hobby was fishing in exotic lakes all over the world. And one sunny afternoon on one of these lakes, the Loch Ness Monster came up from the depths of the lake and threatened to destroy the atheist. In a moment of panic, he looked up to the sky and said, "Lord, Lord, please save me." The heavens opened up and the voice of the Lord was heard to say, "Wait a minute, I thought you didn't believe in me." And the fisherman looked up and said, Lord, give me a break. 2 minutes ago, I didn't believe in the Loch Ness Monster either. The point of that is that until something happens that usually is traumatic in your life, you do not seek spirituality or God. You just don't. I heard a fellow say one time in a meeting, he said, if I had enough money, I didn't need God. Surely sacrilegious by nature. But how many really people would have the nerve even to say that with their lips, but think that in their heart? That they're very independent because they're wealthy, the rich. You know, it's as easy as a rich man to get into heaven as it is for a camel to through the eye of the needle. And that's probably what he was talking about. There was another situation that occurred. There was a man on a bridge in Georgia, I believe. It was the Waxahachie Bridge. And this fellow's walking along, and he sees this fellow on the bridge right at the edge. And he walks over to him, and it's a really swift-moving river and way down there. And he says, excuse me. He says, what are you doing? He says, I'm going to commit suicide. He says, life has lost its meaning. I don't see the purpose of living anymore. And the fellow said, are you a religious man? And the potential suicide turned around and said, well, I am. He says, are you a Buddhist or a Christian? He says, I'm a Christian. And the fellow said, well, so am I. He says, are you a Catholic or a Protestant? He says, I'm a Protestant. And the other fellow says, well, sure, yeah, so am I. He says, are you a Baptist or an Episcopalian? He says, I'm a Baptist. And he says, well, so am I. He says, are you a Reformed Baptist? He says, yes. He says, well, me too. He says, are you a Reformed Baptist from 1989 or a Reformed Baptist from 1918? He says, I'm a Reformed Baptist from 1918. And the fellow pushed him off into the water with the words, die, you heretic scum. And sometimes that's how we treat other people with other religions, even in our own religion. If they don't have the same exact minutiae of our understanding, we hold them in contempt. So when you come into the rooms, we don't ask you to do anything as far as spirituality or religion. We ask you to determine in the third step that first it is acknowledging that there's something other than yourself. Bill W. said this was a spiritual kindergarten. So we take them all. We take the Jew and the Gentile. The Christian, for sure. Originally, it was a Christian fellowship. The agnostic and the atheist. Islam. All are welcome. People who have no God, they're welcome to. When I had a sponsee one time, a Jewish kid. And Jesus Christ is my higher power. So when I pray to Jesus. I close it in the name of Jesus. I tell him that nothing comes to the Father except through the Son, but that's me. I don't ask you to do anything. So he says, look, you know, Joseph, I really like you for my sponsor, but I'm Jewish, and, you know, I can't pray to Jesus Christ. I says, you don't understand, Stuart. I says, all I need you to do is to pray. I says, you could pray in Hebrew if you need to pray. Oh. I had one fella didn't know who to pray to. He says, I just really don't know who to pray to. I said, that'll work. I says, address your prayer to whom it may concern. That's good enough to get you started. Do you have any experience with that, Oliver?
Yeah, I'm really dwelling on what you were talking about a little bit ago when you were talking about the desperation. You know, That's how the second and third steps, namely, came to me. The easiest is when I was desperate enough to accept those principles. You know, when my human resources failed me, when I discovered that, you know, not only could I not keep myself sober, but neither could, you know, my folks, my friends, my wife, the probation department, my employer. none of these threats, none of these threats to my my habits, my drinking habits and drugging habits, were keeping me sober. You know, no matter how much I wished or tried on my own, I just couldn't do it. I could not drink or drug. So when I had no other options, it was a lot easier to accept. And especially this time around, when I got sober, this period of sobriety, which is the longest I've ever stayed sober, longest I've ever gone without a drink. I think just admitting, you know, honestly admitting to myself and to my sponsor that I didn't rightly know whether God existed or not, and, you know, whatever form there is, just admitting that I did not know, laid the foundation for moving forward in the steps. You know, because growing up in an agnostic household, I just wasn't exposed to any of these ideas, really. You know, I had some neighbors when I was a kid that offered to take me to church, and I did that for a while. My mother wanted me to go. You know, she didn't ever keep me from being exposed to these these religious spiritual ideas. So that was really the only exposure I ever had. You know, and being playing God for so long when I was drinking and drugging and then not getting any really positive results out of it. That desperation came rather quickly. I really like, you know, how the Big Book talks about, you know, especially that story in I believe it's in Bill's story where Evie's sitting at the table with him in the kitchen, and Bill, you know, passes a drink over, and the guy and Evie says, you know, no, I've got religion, you know, and he's like, you know, what's got into this guy? And you know, they start talking about the God idea, and you know, Bill has all these old protestations, you know, these old resentments against, you know, the church and the pious people in the church,
it's the deal that God gave him a bad hand of cards. That's why his life wasn't, it wasn't at his responsibility that he was drinking and he was making poor choices. Because of that, God wasn't doing for him what he thought God was supposed to be doing for him. So there's an automatic resentment. How come you're not doing it for me?
Well, I really liked how he said something along the lines of, he definitely believed in the devil because he seemed to be boss supreme here on earth, and I can really relate to that statement. But what I was getting at was, you know, Ebby finally told him, you know, what about your own conception of God? You know, what's your own conception? And you know, that's what my sponsor asked me to do when we came to the second step. You know, he told me, you know, I just want you, what do you conceive of as a higher power? And that the only thing I could think of was just looking at the earth, looking at the plants and the trees and, you know, the birds and the animals, and just, you know, understanding that this, I just couldn't see how it could be some big mistake. It just all seemed too creative, too purposeful for it to be some accident. And that's, you know, my belief in a higher power just kind of grew from that observation. You know, but spiritual to me has always been, you know, when I think of the spirit, you know, when I was drinking and I was drugging, I was doing all these things that I wasn't proud of in order to continue attempting to manage my disease. I did all these horrible things, these things I regretted. You know, I was this other person when I didn't want to be. I wanted to enjoy this certain kind of life, and I know I didn't deserve it. I was in bad spirits. You know, my spirit was in a bad place. You know, when I'm doing good things, when I'm doing what I'm say I'm going to do, when I'm doing the things that I really want to do and taking care of myself and my family and just doing the right things, I'm in very good spirits. I feel very good about myself, you know, kind of like the kind of thing when you help, you know, the old lady cross the street, or you go and help a friend, you know, out that's, you know, maybe blown a tire or something, or, you know, just giving of yourself, not expecting anything in return. You feel good about yourself, you know, you're uplifted, you know. That's what I think of a spirit. I had to really break it down like that, because a lot of these terms and stuff that I was seeing when I first came into AA just really threw me off, and that same kind of resentful attitude that Bill described in his story in the Big Book, that's just nailed it. You know, that's how I felt whenever approached anything, you know, concerning spiritual or religion in nature.
Yeah, thank you. That's very insightful. I wanted to give the phone number if anyone would like to call in and give their comments or opinions on the what we're discussing. The call-in number, the guest call-in number is 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. And you're welcome to call in and tell us what you your experience, strength, and hope is. I was going to address something that I had received from the rumradio.org website. It was a comment I had received from Step 11 out of the 12 steps. Step 11 is a spiritual step. They all have underpinnings of a spirituality in them. Step 11 refines a little bit more. If you don't know what it says, it's sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Prayer is talking to God, and meditation is listening to God. And this helps us with self-examination, as we ask to see what character flaws and defects. I put it to you this way. Prayer is the quarterback. We put it out. Meditation is the feedback. We listen. And self-examination is the goal line. We do not pray for our own selfish ends. How often have we prayed for something we wanted and got it and turned out to be bad for us? And how often did we think something that was bad for us turned out exactly what we needed? So when we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, well, then he's the one who does it. So all we ask for is to know his will and the power to carry that out, and then we trust in a loving God. So that's a spiritual concept. And I had this lady that wrote a comment. I'm going to read you the comment and the response. A prayer, love, why are people insisting I pray on my knees? What's with the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting? The God of my understanding does not demand or really want these things, yet I'm told I must. As a Buddhist, actually she put a Buddhist, I do not tell Catholics how to meditate. Why do they control how to pray? The only reference to knees in the Big Book, and I dropped to my knees, a personal experience. I was told Sister Ignatia suggested Our Father, but she was not even an alcoholic. I love the fact we all find our journey to a higher power, God, but why hold on to the Oxford Group value system? The Oxford Group, for those of you who are not familiar, was one of the groups that was the AA is one of the offsprings, is the offspring from the Oxford Group. It did not work for Ebby. Can we please remember this is not a Christian program? We may all walk many roads. May you find God, and may you find him or her or it now. I love everyone. So I want everyone to feel loved. Please go in peace. She really didn't sign it, but it was Lars. It came in as Lars, so I addressed her as, hi, Lars. I can understand your objection to the Christian format, as a very good friend of mine is also a Buddhist. I venerate and embrace the simplicity of the teachings, Shakyamuni, Siddhartha, Gautama, the Buddha, Sid by his friends. Getting down on one's knees is a sign of awe and reverence, an agreement of submission, surrender, and letting go of pride. It's about humility, acknowledging the spirit of the universe as greater than me, a form of body language, and appreciate of the wonders of the infinite good that resides in me, while remaining like a little child. The originators of the BIC were called the James Gang, because some understandings of the Big Book come from the Book of James. As I tried to explain to my buddy, for good or for ill, America is a Christian-based culture. The ultimate demise of the Oxford Group was about exclusivity and embracing the outside issue, the political hot potato, the temperance movement. I'm sure you have noticed we start the meeting with a prayer, an invocation, and then we close with a prayer, a benediction, and all meetings of recovery are gratitude meetings, regardless of the topic's been. An attitude of gratitude is a prayer unto God. I personally object to recited and wrote. For the matter, we can use a prayer reel with photocopies. I believe that the Our Father is a template to a prayer, that God would prefer to hear your heart and not just a scripted dialogue. As Bill observed and was confirmed to me in a meeting last evening, AA is a spiritual kindergarten. What God is or isn't is beyond my purview of understanding, as any attempt to describe God would be like asking a fish to describe the water it swims in. A friend in early recovery related his experience in a meeting once upon a time. David said he was speaking to God as one man talks to another in an animated, ongoing conversation. He paused and reflected that he was not really talking to God, that he was just talking to himself. And then he said he heard a still, small voice that said, "I am you, but you are not me." Love and service is our goal, while love and tolerance of others is our code. I would suggest not embracing the differences, for we are one in purpose, to stay sober and help the next sufferer. We now have the extraordinary opportunity to be the hands of God, as you understand hands. That was my response. You still there, Oliver?
Yes, sir.
Oh, we have another call. Can you hold on? We have another caller. I want to see who that may be. Okay. Hello? This is Joseph?
Hello?
And who is this?
This is Robert.
Robert, welcome.
Hello.
Did you have something you wanted to discuss?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Hey, I just found this online. My friend was showing me this. I think this is a great topic. I've been clean a little over 3 years in Narcotics Anonymous.
Oh, good.
And I came in like a total atheist, agnostic type thing. No understanding of any religion or whatever. After about a year and a half, the God word was really bothering me. Luckily, I did the right thing and talked to my sponsor about it, you know. And he had a great suggestion that I go outside the rooms and find a God of my understanding. And I found Buddhism myself. And the great thing for me is my experience is once I found a God of my understanding, I've learned to accept others' gods of their understandings, you know. So pretty much just called in to listen, but just wanted to share that, you know.
Oh, thank you, Robert. That's important. I think the important thing is for me is that we accept each other's differences and not get into not to get into who's a Buddhist and who's a Methodist and who's a Mormon and who's a Catholic, and you know, that's all individual and that's okay. The Big Book says we're supposed to look at religious people and see where they are right, where they can add to this. Not that we take anything away. Our goal is to help the sufferer stay sober and help the next alcoholic. That's it. Our own religious understanding and growth is individual. The Big Book says our sobriety is contingent upon the maintenance of a daily spiritual condition. But I would ask you this, what maintains itself?
What maintains my like acceptance of the others, you're saying, or
no? Well, it just generally nothing really maintains itself. Let me finish the thought. Nothing really maintains itself on itself. So you're either growing or you're declining, And if you're declining spiritually, your sobriety, if not your recovery, becomes tentative. That's the point I'm trying to make. We have to continue to grow. We can't rest on our laurels.
Oh, I agree. I've gone, you know, idiotically a week without praying, roughly a week, you know, and felt the consequences that my life's becoming more unmanageable. You know, my sponsor says it's me slamming my hand in the door, you know. I continue to, I read literature about, you know, the God of my understanding, too, you know.
Good. The idea is to continue to grow. And part of that growth has to come from being in the service of others. And, you know, it all goes back to our primary purpose, to stay sober and help the other suffer. That's it. However we can do that is okay. If we're helping somebody, we're in God's will. That's how you know. I'll tell you this, and this is for me. When there's service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And we're in that service, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that moment and in that service, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. AA is about being in the moment. The Japanese call it suturai. It's the most powerful place a person can be. And this is one of the gifts we get from sobriety and recovery. You agree with that, Oliver?
Completely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wanted to thank Rob for calling in. I actually know Rob from Facebook and before that from MySpace. I saw he was online, so I asked him to come check Rum Radio out. I knew that he was into the Buddhist philosophy or religion, so I thought he would have, you know, some good stuff to contribute to the topic. You know, I was thinking, Joseph, about what you were saying, your response to that comment that lady made, and you know, I immediately thought about that part in the big book, right after the third step prayer, where it says that it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional so long as we expressed the idea of voicing it without reservation. This was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. And I really like that. It's along the lines of, you know, this program is suggestive, and they give you some really good suggestions in here, but I really like that. I think that really pinpoints, you know, saying, you know, we don't have to, you know, say these words exactly, but as long as they, you know, the words that we are going to say in our prayers express the general idea. And, you know, I think if we did have this certain dogma in the program, you know, I wouldn't have lasted you know, the duration of that first meeting. I think they've made it about as simple and as easy as they could, because they didn't want, you know, like you've already said, Joseph, they didn't want anybody to not be able to get this. You know, they wanted everybody to be able to come in, and that was, you know, of course, through a lot of trial and error in their early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. yeah, we definitely have to grow, and I think starting at these simple, with these simple ideas, I think, you know, growth is possible from there. And that's, you know, like I was talking about my own experience earlier, you know, using, looking at nature for proof, because I've always needed that proof that, you know, there's another power out there, you know, and for some people, they have to use the group as their higher power, and I can understand that, and then, you know, that can make a lot of sense, you know, to people, you know, hey, you know, they come into this room, you know, they're having these drinking problems, these drugging problems, they come into the room, they see all these other people that have been able to stay sober for, you know, a year, 5 years, you know, some of them 20, 25 years, 30 years, there has to be a belief in that. Because that's concrete, you know, proof, concrete evidence that, that it's possible. And then when they listen to these people share about how they were able to stay sober, they offer these suggestions. You know, there's really nothing else left for that person to do but to pick up those same tools. But growth is essential in the program. If I'm not growing, you know, like you said, I'm declining. I have to be open and willing to grow in my program and my spirituality and the religion that I practice. You know, I really like what Rob was saying about the praying every day. If I'm not praying, if I'm not reading, you know, I notice my attitude towards life and towards other people, it really starts to deteriorate, you know, because I start taking that power back. I start running the show on my own rather than seeking a direction, an opportunity from my higher power. You know, another thing I'd like to mention about the Big Book, it talks about this tapping an unsuspected inner resource. And that was another thing that I discovered early on, is that, I started to believe and have faith in the notion that my higher power works through other people, because I would hear people share things in meetings that seemed to be directed at me personally. You know, I don't know if anybody's ever had that experience, you know, coming to a meeting and then so people are sharing and you're like, man, they're talking about me. I remember popping resentments in other periods of sobriety. I would come in and this stuff was going on, you know, maybe I wasn't calling my sponsor, or maybe I wasn't handling something right, and the meeting would be on that issue I was having specifically, and I was like, man, what are these people spying on me? They know what's going on. They're talking about me, you know? So, you know,
How did they know?
Yeah. So I've had positive and negative experiences with that, but I firmly believe that that's the closest I'll ever be to God in this world, in this life, is through the interactions with other people, whether it be through physical interactions, you know, doing something for somebody, having somebody do something for me, or somebody sharing something with me from the heart, you know, and not BSing me. Just being open to that experience, being open to those kind of opportunities is how I grow. And, you know, meditation and prayer is something that I'm still working on. I have to keep practicing it in order to get better at it. And I'll never be finished, you know, with that kind of thing.
I just came back from the citywide in Houston. And it's limping along, and Johnny C, I don't know if you've ever heard of Johnny C, he's got like 49 years of sobriety. Cersei, one of the old-timers in AA, was his sponsor, and Chuck C in California was one of his sponsors, and very spiritual man. He's grown. It was a phenomenal talk, one of the best ones I've heard in a long time. Very small drunkalogue, mostly recovery, spirituality. I loved it. You know, and those are getting to be really rare gems when you hear that, especially with 49. And the guy was funny too. And just perchance, as we were waiting before we went in, and they had a little cake and coffee prior to the meeting, he sat down right next to me, and I didn't know the guy. So I introduced myself, and we started talking. I says, "Are you the speaker?" He says, "Yeah." And we started talking about Rum Radio. Gave him a card. He said, "Oh, what a great idea," and then gave to his one of his sponsees was with him too, and he was saying how God, he started the Ark in San Antonio. Great story. He prayed. This thing, this building was completely ready to be demolished with rattlesnakes in the area. He prayed to God, and every time he prayed for something that he needed to help the winos in San Antonio, it materialized almost immediately. So I could see that God had this man in the palm of his hand, and I really believe he sat next to me to get the rumradio.org card that was supposed to be. Of all the places he could sit, plop down right next to me.
Wow.
But I see God work, and see, to me, these are miracles. If you're looking for the miracle and you expect the miracles will happen, and it comes from working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had this I wanted to read. It's Bill W. talks about his spiritual experience. In December 1934, I appeared at Towns Hospital, New York. My old friend, Dr. William Silkworth, shook his head. Soon free of my sedation and alcohol, I felt horribly depressed. My friend, Ebby, turned up, and although glad to see him, I shrank a little as I feared evangelism. But nothing of the sort happened. After some small talk, I again asked him for his neat little formula for recovery. Quietly, insanely, and without the slightest pressure, he told me, and then he left. Lying there in conflict, I dropped into the blackest depression I had ever known. Momentarily, my prideful depression was crushed. I cried out, "Now I'm ready to do anything, anything to receive what my friend Ebby has." Though I certainly didn't expect anything, I did make this frantic appeal. If there be a God, will he show himself? The result was instant, electric beyond description. The place seemed to light up, blinding white. I knew only ecstasy and seemed on a mountain. A great wind blew, enveloping and penetrating me. To me, it was not of air, but of spirit. Blazing, there came this tremendous start. You are a free man. Then the ecstasy subsided. Still on the bed, I now found myself in a new world of consciousness, which was suffused by a presence, one with the universe. A great peace came over me. I thought, so this is the God of the preachers. This is the great reality. But soon my so-called reason returned. My modern education took over, and I thought, I must be crazy. And I became terribly frightened. Dr. Silkworth, a medical saint if there ever was one, came in to hear my trembling account of this phenomenon. After questioning me carefully, he assured me that I was not mad and that perhaps undergone a psychic experience which might solve my problem. Skeptical man of science though he was, this was the most kind and astute. If he had said, hallucination, I might now be dead. To him I shall ever be eternally grateful. Good fortune pursued me. That's a great story, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I wanted to address the fact that some of us in the program, upon working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, or whatever 12-step program you're on, as long as it fits that basic criteria of how the 12 steps work, the 12 steps is the repentance process for children. It's a very highly spiritual, evoked principle. We believe that, and I would testify to you that the big book is a spiritual work given to us by a loving God for a specific group of people to accomplish a specific act. Bill and Dr. Bob were common, everyday, run-of-the-mill, garden-variety drunks, and I believe God uses the weak things of this world to accomplish his ends. They've helped millions of people. Bill had a spiritual experience. The experience comes in a short frame of time. Blinding light. We call it the burning bush. That's what he needed. Now, Dr. Bob was a man of science and a spiritual man. When Dr. Bob and Bill met, Dr. Bob told him, he said, well, that's another good story, but we don't have enough time. I call it Billy Pilgrim at the Mayflower. We'll get into that another program. When they finally met, Dr. Bob said, I can give you 15 minutes. Dr. Bob didn't want to talk to Bill. He said, I'm going to give you 15 minutes. He says, let me tell you. He says, I've been prayed over. I've taken the cure. I've been sliced and diced more than a Christmas turkey. What are you going to tell me in 15 minutes that it's going to keep me sober? And Bill turned around to him and says, I'm not here to keep you sober. I'm here to keep me sober. And they talked for 6 hours after that. Dr. Bob was a very well-read man and highly religious. Read the Bible every day. Had Jesus, was baptized, had done everything his religion asked him to do, but still was not able to overcome the butcher's bill of alcoholism. Dr. Bob, the religious man, had a spiritual awakening. I liken it to Isaiah, line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. That's how most of us get spirituality, a little bit at a time, going to meetings. Time takes time. We have to go to our meetings. We have to work the steps, and sooner the better. Having worked the steps, having worked step five, now we're in a position to go out and help our fellow sufferers. We get to be a good sponsor by sponsoring. Some people get the awakening. Some people get the experience. My understanding is that we get what we need. The experience, the burning bush alone, is not sufficient in long term to keep you sober. We have to continue on. I've known people who've gotten a burning bush and it didn't last. They were living on that experience that they had 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, without expanding their spiritual experience. They went out. My experience is that the people who have the awakening and continue to grow spiritually are the cornerstones of Alcoholics Anonymous and the recovery movement, continuing to grow, getting closer and closer to the God of their understanding. Okay, that's enough out of me. Any comments, suggestions? Robert, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm just listening good. I like a lot of what you guys are sharing.
Well, I like your perspective as a Buddhist. I mean, it's, you know, it's a distance from...
Yeah, the woman you read about earlier, the Buddhist woman in Alcoholics Anonymous, the Lord's Prayer and stuff. You know, I've had some people question me in Narcotics Anonymous. A lot of our meetings we close with the Serenity Prayer, and I just choose not to say it. But I participate in a group and gather up in a group hug and stay silent, you know. And I've had a few people think that I'm trying to be different or whatnot. But, you know, it's just my religious views are, you know, prayer is a personal thing, but, you know, I know the unity of recovery is what keeps me clean too, you know, and I need that unity. So I don't know if she's listening or whatnot, you know, but it just goes along with their, and I don't know, this is kind of weird for me to talk on the phone like this, so I'm pretty much just listening, but thank you.
Well, you're doing great. Most people, you know, the number one fear is talking in public. Did you know that, Robert?
Yeah, you know, I go to school. I started to go to college at 18 months clean, and it's actually quite funny where a lot of people are scared to go up to do their presentations, and they has taught me not to be nervous in a group of people, and that's weird that I feel nervous here and I don't even see you guys. But.
Let me give you this, and this is my understanding. The reason why speaking in public is the number one fear, it's more than the death of the body, more than the death of a child, more than the loss of a home, a divorce, loss of a job. And then when you first look at that, it pales into comparison to the consequences of all the other fears. But number one is still speaking in public, and I come to the agreement that speaking in public is the number one fear because ridicule is death to the ego. And the ego will sacrifice the body on the altar of pride in a vain attempt to stay alive. The preacher said, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. What I've learned is some people don't know me and they don't like me. Some people get to know me, then they don't like me. It's none of my business what you think of me because you think so little of me anyway. If not in stature, surely in time. Most people are too busy thinking about themselves to give me free rent in their head for any great length of time. So should I? Should I really be?
That's a good one.
Should I really be concerned for the nanosecond I pass by from ear to ear?
You know, with that, on the topic of, you know, like spirituality and religion, how they agree in the rooms, you know, I'm a, you know, believer that, you know, you know, like NA or recovery, 12-step recovery, even though it goes in depth with spirituality, it's almost like spirituality for dummies. And even though we're smart people, because we found ways and means to get more no matter what, I'm so smart, I'm stupid, in a sense. So bullheaded, you know, so controlling that I can't even control my life and all that good stuff that we have to admit, you know. So I'm going to listen again.
What's your name, sir?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Who are you looking for? Joseph. I'm Joseph.
Joseph, nice to meet you, Joseph. Yeah, Oliver is a great guy. I met him back in the MySpace days, on MySpace, of course. And, you know, he lives out in Texas, I believe, not to break that. But then I live out in Chicagoland region. And we've talked on the phone a few times in the 2.5 years I know him. That's it's real cool how our fellowships are that big, you know?
Yeah, likewise.
Oh, good. I'm glad. It is a fellowship of the spirit. There's no doubt about it. It's we're less than kin and more than kind. We have an agreement and understanding that surpasses normal understanding. People outside of the rooms don't understand We don't like in your club. There's always going to be somebody you're not crazy about, and if you hear the SOB share one more time, you're ready to pour gasoline and light yourself on fire.
Yep.
But if he was going to go out drinking, you'd go to the gates of hell to help the guy.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
No matter whether you like them or not, you're going. You know, if you hear he's in trouble, You're out of the door. 3 o'clock in the morning, whatever it is, you're there. And that's hard to find, that kind of commitment nowadays. Anywhere, everyone is just so busy with doing their own stuff, and really has no. How many people actually know their neighbors? Not many. It's kind of a shame in a way, but so. The fellowship of the 12-step program is a spiritual fellowship. It takes us from the depths of despair to the heights of understanding and enlightenment. A lot of people go on. They become very active in their churches after that. I have friends of mine that, you know, they get active and they leave AA. And there was a guy at the spa today and at the gym. And I started to talk to him, and I know him about a year or so, and, you know, I started talking, and he was very reluctant. Well, it turned out he had 20-something years and dropped out. And he doesn't go anymore. And I met another lady, same, she had 5 years. And, you know, we start talking, and it kind of revigorates them by talking to these folks again. You know, the excitement and the spirituality, the newcomer coming in and watch people grow and the fellowship growing around you. And it's something not to miss. It's almost like you feel sorry for people who don't experience it. Yeah, Oliver?
Yes. Yeah, well.
You know, you...
Oh, go ahead.
I feel, you know, when I first came in the room, I couldn't even say alcoholic. It was like, it got caught in my throat, you know. And for the longest time, I couldn't just say alcoholic. I had to say alcoholic addict. Like, it was an addict was like the chaser.
Yeah, like Irving.
Yeah, I know, but I just the alcohol, I'm an alcohol addict. Hi, I'd like to have an alcoholic with an addict back, please. And then I was at a conference in St. Thomas, and an old-timer came up to me and said, "What's this addict stuff?" He says, "Where's your singleness of purpose?"
Mm-hmm.
So my identity statement has grown over the years. I use my last name. I won't use it here because of our 11 tradition. I think that's important. But I would say I'm a recovered, grateful, recovered alcoholic. And it's a positive statement now. It's not a negative statement. You see the difference? Grateful, recovered. We're 100 men and women who've recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. I think recovered is like, I don't know, 12 or 16 times in the big book. Of course, the argument is what, we never really recover. We're always recovering kind of deal. But the big book says recovered. You know what? I'm recovered. If the big book says it, I'm there. That's me. There's a lot of good material. The 12 and 12, I think, is like a concordance to the big book. A lot of great information in the 12 and 12. There's a Facebook sponsorship deal, and you bring up the 12 and 12, and it's like it's a heresy. I go, like, what's wrong with you guys? Were you living in a cave? What's up? You know, like messages from the heart. And we have so much great literature about recovery. And Joe and Charlie, Drop the Rock, A New Pair of Glasses, Back to Basics. We got tons of stuff that amplify our recovery. And we should use everything. In the beginning, the Bible was in every AA meeting. Do you know that? The Bible was in there. Okay, well, it's not there yet. Was in every meeting. James Allen was in there, and Emmett Fox was in there. You could bring anything in. You wanted to bring in the Quran, or if you wanted to bring in a Buddha, whatever you thought had a spiritual tone that would help an alcoholic stay sober, whether it was a comic book or a repair manual for a Volkswagen. It was welcome into the room. We've kind of got away from that kind of stuff now. We've kind of just contempt prior to investigation, and the lack of open-mindedness, I think, has been one of the reasons why AA has not flourished as it should. Bill's vision, you know, a vision for you, Bill's vision was that AA was going to cover the globe, that this was going to be a phenomenon of sobriety throughout the world. That was the vision that he saw. Interesting, wasn't it? I mean, it was kind of grandiose, but he really believed that strong in the spiritual power of doing that. And then growing spiritually. You can't grow spiritually by just staying in kindergarten. If you're going to get a PhD in kindergarten, it really is just a piled higher and deeper. You have to start expanding your life outside of AA. Well, that's my experience anyway, and I found the more I learn outside of the rooms, the more I'm effective inside the rooms. As we grow spiritually, we grow in effectiveness. And that's our charter. That's our agreement, to help the other suffer and stay sober. That's the agreement. That's the charter. And however we find to do that. All right, guys, any last minute? We got one minute.
I'm glad you guys are wrapping up, because the funny thing is, even though I'm not Christian, I got to go to bed Saturday night so I can go to my wife's church tomorrow morning. I go there for the similarities with the spirituality. I like about 90% of it.
You're a good husband. The
similarities, you know?
Good for you,
thank
Robert.
I try to be a good husband. It's thanks to recovery. So, hey, what time, can I ask, what days is this on or whatnot?
Saturday nights at 9 o'clock, every Saturday.
Oh, great. I'll be here next Saturday, hopefully.
Awesome. Okay, great. We're looking forward to it. Thanks for calling, Robert. Oliver, thank you for coming in. That was really good. I'm so glad you hope to see you next time or the next time you're available. Let's just get the word out.
Absolutely.
Peace out.
I plan on coming back next week. And I just wanted to say one thing real quick, man. You have an awesome radio voice. This is a great show, man. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Oliver. You've always been a really good friend to me and a big help. Thanks again, kiddo. Have a good night.
You too.